My name is Maria Nylands. I was a member of our Arts and Aesthetics Committee a long time ago when the late Mel Moliath was chair. She was a good friend of Charles Eliot, and she dreamt of having a sculpture of Charles in our church in recognition of the Tsarkiv First Nations and their land on which we built our beloved church. A fund was started in memory of Mel, especially for the purpose of fulfilling her dream. Many of her family members and friends of the church contributed to this fund, and we thank you. That was the beginning. It took a while, including some fallow years, but here we are. After many meetings with Charles and the persistence of our present art and aesthetics team, wow, the dream has finally come true. A special day for me too. Congratulations to Charles and to the present Arts and Aesthetics Committee. My heart is filled with joy and gratitude that it happened. Thank you all for making this happen. Today is a day of friendship and close understanding. And now I invite Charles Eliot and Betty Sherwood, co-chair of the Arts and Aesthetics team, to unveil the art.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm here with my brother John, and we're both happy to be here with you this morning. And it's true, we do have a long relationship with the Unitarian Church, going back numbers of years. And I like that story that was told about how Keith Jobson had given me a phone call and for me to come and speak with them, and his question to me was, we know we're on First Nations territory, and specifically the Saanich First Nation. And he said, the Unitarian Church congregation would like to have a closer relationship with the Saanich First Nations people, and do you have any ideas how this we can bring this about? So with some discussion, I told Keith, I said, well, Keith, I'm an artist, I'm a carver, and my life is dedicated to that. And I've noticed that it always does bring people together. And I said, what about the possibility of holding an art show in this wonderful building here? So we were all excited about the idea and went forward and started our first annual Coast Salish art show. We called it Coast Salish Artists and Friends, because we didn't want to be just exclusive and maybe leave someone out. So we left the door open a crack, and other artists were welcomed in. So I think we held five shows in a row somewhere in this church, in this building, and they were all wonderful examples of cooperation and working together. And the art shows always came out of a very success to the artists and also to all the Unitarian congregation who were helping us at that time. So over the years, we've developed a relationship, and we still have that respect for each other, and are willing to come and be with you when we're called upon. So that's why my brother John and myself are here today. And this carving that's here was a long time coming. And I was a very good friend of Mel Mollett, and I had met her through, there was a theater group that was started here in Victoria one time. It was called Potlatch Arts, and we were all pulled into it. I wouldn't make much of an actor anymore, but we're going back 25 years or more. So anyways, and the fund was started to purchase a piece of artwork to show the relationship that existed with Mel Mollett and the First Nations people. First Nations people had a great respect for Mel Millette. So, anyway, after many years, and we finally arrived at the, this point here where I was asked if I would create a carving that had significance to the seventh principle and also to this beautiful area where this Unitarian Church is located. So a lot of the time when an artist or a carver is asked to do a piece of work, the majority of it takes place in our mind. And I know people call it vision. I guess it is a kind of a vision when you try to envision what you can do with your talents as a painter, carver, weaver, or anything like that. So after a lot of thought and knowing how the Unitarian Church functions as we're witnessing here today, I came up with the idea of this carving. We have in our culture a great respect for the circle, and because we know that all things work in circles, cycles, circles, our trip around the sun every day and every year, and the repeat of things in nature year after year, the trees blooming and going back into a dormant state, then blooming again. So we have a great respect for the circle, so that's why I've chosen a circular shape to present the artwork on. And I was only given 30 seconds. I think I've gone past it. I'm going to try to pick up the pace a bit here. But so in the very center here, there's two faces. There's a face right there. I don't know if you can see it from way back there. But there's a mouth, and that's the singing, a person singing. Then if I cover this here, there's another face there with the same mouth, singing again, communicating. And there's a female face with finer features, and the male face with a little coarser features, like bigger eyebrows and wider nose and things like that. So they share, like men and women are supposed to share in their relationships and in their involvements. So that's why they're in there. And the frog in our culture is really, really important, because the frog is the one who heralds in, who announces the beginning of each year. We didn't have a calendar such with numbers and things on it, but we went by the prompts from nature. And the thing with the frog was when the frogs began to sing. And if you've ever been outside, when they begin to sing, they all begin at once. They do. And it can be so loud and so beautiful. So there's frogs coming out from behind the faces. And also, I intended this to be the symbol of the moon from the heavens. And the frog, there's one frog coming out that way, another one that way. There's four of them, which is the four cycles of life and the four directions. Four is the First Nations number. That's our favorite number, because we notice that everything works in fours. So, and when the frogs come out from behind the sphere as the moon or the earth, their hands are spread like that. They spread out, and then they could also be the rays of the sun. Then this all could be interpreted as the sun as well. And the sun is also a great sign of hope for our people. When there's sun, there's hope. So, yeah, that's what that's for. And for the animals and birds from this area here, this wonderful, beautiful place that most of the time has got a flood out here and underwater for a good part of the year, there is a raven coming into the circle. The raven is a messenger in our culture, amongst other things, a trickster, a transformer. And then over here, there's an eagle flying into the circle for the foresight and wisdom. Up in this corner, up in this section here, I didn't want to leave out the insect world. So there's a dragonfly in here And someone said it looks like a marijuana plant, but... And, but anyway, it's a dragonfly, and you can see its big eyes there, and its four wings. And then I didn't want to leave out the people of the oceans and the waters and that. So we have a salmon here. Yeah, we call them people too because we all believe we're all the same, equal in that. There's a stream close by here that the salmon come up. I'm not sure if that's a foregone thing, but that stream empties into Todd Inlet, which is where we had a great village at one time for the Hoseinage people, the Saanich people. So I've tried to include as many different things as possible. I want this to be interesting for all you folks to look at and not just say, oh, yeah, okay, bye, you know. But to be able to pick out different things and, you know, enjoy it. So again, it's done in a circle because we believe in the circle. And one of the things that First Nations artists go and study is a spindle whirl, which is a round disc which always has a picture on one side. There's a stick that would come through the center of it, and it was fun to spin wool. And we had a great wool industry, weaving industry, amongst the Coast Salish people at one time. So this is sort of like based on a spindle whirl design with the holes through the center. There's lots of meaning. I tried to put as much meaning into it as possible. So anyway, I've passed the 30 seconds. So thank you all for listening.
And now we invite forward John Elliott, who is an educator and an elder. And he is going to offer a blessing of the art. And then I think he's going to tell a story about frogs.
Hi, Scotiam, Papa, and Jay. Hey, do I? Yeah, my name's Graham, Jay. It's a dear, hello. Just to acknowledge the brother for doing this work for the people here. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to all of you for inviting us and acknowledging our First Nations people and presence on the land. It's been a long presence on this land. I appreciate that acknowledgement. Aishwahila. The wood is sacred to us. This kind of wood. The cedar, we call it, means sacred tree in our language. The circle represents what we call anskil. It means a natural law, the natural law that there is given to us to live by, anskil. So what you do over here in life, in the beginning of your circle, it's going to, whatever you do within that life that you live, it's going to come around and visit you another day. If you're kind here, and you're kind here, and you're kind here in your life, that kindness will return to you. That's a law for our people. That's what we live by. And that's why the circle is also on the drum, to remind us of that law, that we should be good and kind in life. All parts of nature are our belief. We are connected to nature in all ways. The wind, every part of the wind that blows, whether it's the spraying it, the shush, the stewit, or the soft touch, it all represents a human from a long time ago. And each one of those characters remind us of how we should live in life, in our family laws. Our family laws, how we should treat our children, our immediate family, how we should be a family as one. Because when you have a strong family, you have a strong community. Those are laws that people have lived by. So when I see this, that reminds me of those laws. That reminds me of those things. You know, and often you see our people wearing a feather or used feather and a regalia from an eagle. And the eagle is, as we see, the, as something very special. Kind of favored by the Great Spirit. That's our vision of it. Because it's able to live and fly close to the Great Spirit high up in the sky. And it's adorned with a special coating. Adorned with a special clothing that it has. We call it a sacred outfit that it's wearing. And if we find one of those feathers, it's like special to us. So those are meaningful to us. The raven is a great teacher for our children and all of us. And many of our raven stories, it tells our children how to have manners when they're moving about in our family, with our families and our communities. To have respect, show respect, and show good manners. And often in a story, the raven is one who doesn't have the good manners, because he always wants to be like someone else, never satisfied with being his own self, but always wanting to imitate someone else. And there's lots of good humor in it, lots of good humor in the stories, and lots of teachings. So, raven's like a teacher. I appreciate the church to inviting us to come to be a part of this and display this beautiful piece of artwork in your hall. This is a reminder to you about the way that our people have lived on this land for a long time. Every part of nature is a belief for us. Any part of nature is a belief. Whether it's the wind, the sun, the moon, the season, the river, the water, the rain. It's all part of our relative in one way or another. It's like the little frog. The little frog that's here, that you see. That has human hands, like us, to remind us of its origin. At one time long ago, it was human being, like ourselves. That's part of what we believe. That's what makes us different. We are of that. We are of that nation that believes that. That's our way. When I was a young man hunting, and I used to walk up into the forest looking for the deer and come across a beautiful little pond in the forest that's so still and so quiet. And my mother said, when you find a place like that, don't take the water and drink it facing that pond. Turn away and show respect to the spirit that lives there. That water has a life of its own. That's a teaching. That's a value that our people hold. And that's part of who we are. I won't keep it too long. I won't say too much more. The first human that was found to be the kindest couple of people were changed to be the cedar. And they were changed to the cedar tree because they were kind in life. That's a law for us, to try and be kind to others. Be kind in life. Our late uncle was 85 when he left this world, and about a week before he left, he came to me and he said two things. He said, don't forget to acknowledge these mountains around here in your prayer. Name them by their names. And he said, don't forget, kindness is one of our biggest laws in life. Be kind to others. Show kindness in your time, in your lifetime. It's a law for us. And so the wood is a soft, soft wood. It's a light wood. It's a strong wood. And it's a good example. And it helps us in so many, many ways, the cedar, the sacred tree. And we have other prayer names for it too, but they're like private prayer names that we use for that, to speak to it directly. If we're going to take a tree, we speak to it directly with its original human name. And we thank it for its life. And we apologize to it. that we have taken this life for something, some need. And thank you for bringing the, what we call a stitch, those branches, those boughs today to remind us. Because it's like, for us, it's like, it shows that something special is going to happen here today. To us. That's a blessing. To acknowledge that. And have it inside the building like that. Here, inside here. Even the trees were humans. And we have stories about them. And our father used to tell us when we were little, that was our world that we knew as young children. I guess people call them fairy tales and myths. We call it a belief. We call it a way of life. When we were young, we could hear the spirit of the forest. He fell a tree, and we could hear a tree fall, because that was our way of life. That's what we knew. That was before we got electricity, and we're just little kids sitting on the porch, out in front of the house, the old house. Haiska, Chaos, Emechatia, Esatia, Paloch, Nepok, Nati, Echtichecha, Be, Mishch, Dapon, Chichalangasa, Esatia, Snawat, Ei, Matis, Bestjay, Sitisch, Dapon, Echatia. Hi, Kurdish Jella Jaya Fatia, the D with the great well up when as a dear capacity, as a quintal Fatia. I'll do a song for that. If I can sing, I have a sore throat today, sorry. If I can sing a song for protection for the people that come and go, and the protection of the understanding of this value that we hold, and why we express this in such a way. Children, we call them tlitkat. It derived from that word, tlitkat, the valued ones, the loved ones, the needed ones. They're our future. Hi, hey, hey, you.
Hey!
For the little children. And when the frog comes out and he's a reminder to us, winter's over. Winter season is over and the growing season is beginning. What we call in our language Dalapotland. The season of the food and medicine gathering time is ahead of us now. And all things are going to grow back. And it's a job of the little frog. He looks like a little leaf, if you look at him. He looks like a little leaf with little hands. And he's the waker. He wakes up the plants. He calls out to the plants, "Wake up, wake up. Wake up, be medicine for the people. Help the people. Bring medicine to the people." That's his song. And sings. And he begins the sacred season. So when the frogs are all croaking, we call them, we say, "Wakas, wakas." That's what they sound like to us. "Wakas, wakas, wakas, wakas." But if we're speaking about a frog, a single frog, we call it Sch'enuch. It means keeper of the sacred season. And thank you so much for having us to join you today.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Yeah. Thank you. Some people here believe in a god spirit or the goddess. Some people don't. Some people here are Jewish Unitarian. Some are Christian Unitarian. Some practice Buddhist meditation. Each person here has their own unique set of spiritual beliefs and practices. We Unitarian Universalists have such a wide range of theological beliefs, it makes a person wonder, do Unitarian Universalists share any theological beliefs in common? About 10 years ago, inspired by some work our denomination was doing, I started my own informal inquiry into that very question. I asked people what they believed in their own words. And though there were some theists, and some were agnostics, and some were atheists, nearly everyone believed these two things. One, all people have inherent worth. And the teenagers who are camping this weekend expand this to all beings, not just all people. All beings have inherent worth. And two, we are all interconnected in this web of life. It's basically our first and seventh principle. The other principles are values. The first and seventh are theological statements. These two theological points have ethical ramifications. If all beings have worth, and we are all interconnected, then we feel compelled to treat the web and all in it with respect and compassion. As we read earlier, we are all connected. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Martin Luther King Jr. says it too in another one of my favorite readings in our hymnal. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And there's the line I love from Alice Walker's novel, The Color Purple. The character Shug talks about that feeling of being a part of everything, not separate at all. And she says, "I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed." If you believe we're all interconnected, if you feel our interconnection with the web, then you instinctively treat the earth and other beings with respect and compassion. Unless you are busy, or distracted, or tired, or cranky. I don't know about you, but though I believe in our seventh principle, I do, I don't live it as much as I would like. Even when I'm surrounded by the beauty of this land right here at this church, I too often take it for granted.
I'm so busy, I just drive up, pull my piles of stuff out of the car, laptop, calendar, bag of files, etc., schlep my stuff into the buildings, and then go from meeting to meeting, from email to email, from call to phone call to email again, until I'm done, at which point I schlep my stuff back into the car and drive home. Every now and again, I go from the office building to the sanctuary building, and I do look down at a purple flower, or up across the road, at the hills and the marsh below, green now in the winter with water, sometimes with those swans floating around. I look, I pause, I take a breath, I appreciate. Beautiful. A tenderness for the world stirs within me. It's like pressing a reset button. Mindful of our interconnection, I am opened and ready for compassionate action. I need reminders to do that more often. I would like to suggest that this carving could be such a reminder for all of us, a spiritual touchstone of sorts. This work of art was designed to honor the spirit of our seventh principle. There are two parts to the practice of our seventh principle. One, feeling our interconnection, and two, acting on it. Mindfulness and compassionate action. Consider the first part, mindfulness. This location, this land upon which our church stands, the land of the Saanich First Nations, calls us to that practice of mindfulness. There is a natural beauty all around us here. We need only take the time to commune with it. So I ask you, when you see this carving hanging outside of our building, when it brings to mind our seventh principle, what will you choose to do? What might help you feel your interconnection with the earth? Will you walk the labyrinth behind the farmhouse? Follow the path up the hill to the yurt for some meditation time? Sit on a bench and commune with a tree? Or simply take a deep breath and offer up a thank you to the earth for something lovely that you've noticed that day? When we're more mindful, we're more compassionate, more aware of the impact our actions have upon the world around us. Cultivating that awareness takes deliberate intention. It is easy to lose that focus, to do harm without even thinking about it. My 7-year-old daughter gave me a lesson in this over the summer. We were sitting outside my parents' house in Maine. Evening was coming, and as happens in Maine, the mosquitoes were emerging. Now, we're one of those families that remove spiders from the house with a cup and card. We don't squish them. We set them free. But when those mosquitoes drew near, without thinking, I swatted at them, aiming to kill. Our daughter was horrified. "Mommy, what are you doing?" "Well, I don't want them to bite me." "But they don't hurt you. They just make you itch. And you're going to kill them? That's not fair." She kind of had me there. All a mosquito can do is give me a bump that itches for a couple of days. For that, I was prepared to take its life. It wasn't really a fair trade. I don't know if I will stick to it, but for the rest of the summer, I did my best to refrain from murdering mosquitoes. And should my resolve weaken, I've come across a nightly admonishment. When our son was born, the Vozdansky-Salatso family gave us a book called Goodnight World, which depicts First Nations drawings of different groups of animals on each page. I've noticed that when my son and I say goodnight to the bugs, alongside the dragonfly, spider, ladybug, caterpillar, ant, and grasshopper, is a mosquito. And it's grinning. All a part of the web. I remember learning from a friend of mine in grad school about Jainism, a close cousin of Buddhism. Jainism is rooted in a deep understanding of our interdependence with all beings, and its highest principle is ahimsa, nonviolence. According to Jain leader Bhagwan Mahavir, if you kill someone, it is yourself you kill. If you harm someone, it is yourself you harm. My friend told me that not only do Jain monks abstain from eating meat, some of them avoid traveling by car or airplane, as doing so crushes insects on the ground and in the air. Apparently, Jains acknowledge that you can't avoid killing entirely. Some ants are going to get stepped on. But the point is to be careful, to live with compassionate intention. Compassionate intention seems wise even for those of us who are not Jain. Even if we do eat meat or swat at bugs, it seems to me that there is something disrespectful about doing these things carelessly without giving it a second thought. If I do choose to kill a mosquito again, it seems the least I could do is say I'm sorry. Just as I admire the Jains, I am touched by the mindfulness, the respect for the web of life inherent in many First Nations traditions. When they take the life of an animal, be it a whale or a bison, not only do they use every part, from meat to hide to bone and sinew, in many traditions the people thank the animal spirit for its sacrifice. I read, for example, that among the woodland First Nations, a bear hunter would talk or sing to a bear before it died, thanking the animal for providing the hunter and his family with much needed food. It reminds me of the power to be found in saying a grace before a meal. Whether silently or out loud, in solitude or in community, before we eat, we can practice our seventh principle by offering up our gratitude for the food, for those who cooked the food, for those who grew or raised the food, and for the earth from which it all came. Appreciating the beauty of this land, the mosquito dilemma, the Jains, the hunter's prayer, saying grace before a meal, that was all about mindfulness, feeling our interconnection. The second part of living our seventh principle is what results from feeling our interconnection, compassionate action. You all do different things to care for this planet and those who dwell upon it. Perhaps you recycle, eat local foods, ride your bike, carpool, buy secondhand clothes, turn off lights you're not using. Before I end, I'd like to highlight three other opportunities to practice our seventh principle. In your order of service inside on the bottom left, you will see a note about a walk for reconciliation happening in Vancouver next Sunday. The walk is the final event in a series marking the end of the Truth and Reconciliation's visit in Vancouver. In this web of life, we are not just interdependent with the earth. We are interdependent with other people. And being mindful of our interdependence with people means tending to our relationships. When things are good, and when things are hard. Yesterday, Jewish people all over the world observed Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. It is an annual observance that includes apologizing to all those you have harmed over the past year. People in 12-step programs do a similar thing, the making of amends in steps 8 and 9. Both rituals are grounded in an awareness of how our own actions have affected others. Participating in next Sunday's Walk for Reconciliation is similarly an act that underscores our interdependence with those with whom we share this web of life. It's about supporting people who have been harmed, supporting the work of reconciliation that has the power to heal. It's about building bridges and nurturing relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal cultures. It is a good way to do what our opening song suggests, and stand on the side of love. The walk itself will be celebratory in nature, with fun activities at the end, a good event with which to participate with family and friends. I posted a link to the full program of the week's events on our congregation's Facebook group. A second opportunity to practice our seventh principle is coming up on Sunday, October 13th, here in Victoria. It is a run for biodiversity. The run is a part of our larger effort sponsored by the Unitarian Service Committee of Canada, which focuses on finding ways to renew the 75% of global biodiversity that we have lost over the past century. A fact set from their website says, today, 80% of the world's dietary energy is supplied by just 12 industrial crops. On a more positive note, a study in 2000 showed that planting multiple rice varieties in one field in China increased yields by 89%, largely because the varied crop was resistant to disease in a way that a single crop is not. Several people from our church are already signed up to participate in the Run for Biodiversity, whether by running, walking, or working in supportive roles. Our kids and youth are being invited to participate as well. So if you yourself can't make it, you might want to ask Faye, our Director of Children's Programming, if there is a kid you can sponsor. Lastly, as previously mentioned, our church's Environmental Action Team meets today after church. They welcome newcomers. You can visit and see what they're up to, maybe join them in their planning for this year. People involved are Marion Pape, if you could raise your hand. Marion, there's Marion and Louise Cole. Are you here also? And Louise. They'd love to have you join them. This carving can be a spiritual touchstone for us all, a call to mindfulness, to feel our connection with the web of life, a call to compassionate action, to care for the web of life. Picture it. When you encounter this carving at our entrance Sunday after Sunday, what will it say to you? Let me know how it goes.